Hi, I'm Elise.
I'm Matt, and welcome to Pod Wraiths, a Star Trek Deep Space Nine podcast. If this is your first time joining us, we're two friends watching Star Trek Deep Space Nine and sharing both our deep and irreverent thoughts on our favorite Star Trek series.
This week, we're talking about Season 5, Episode 8, Things Past. Teleplay by Michael Taylor and directed by LeVar Burton. Things Past aired on November 18th, 1996.
This week on Deep Space Nine, Sisko, Odo, Dax, and Garak are trapped 7 years in the past on Terak Nor, but everyone else thinks that they're condemned Bajorans, and only Odo's memory can save them. What an episode. Elise, did you or did you not remember it?
I vaguely remembered this episode, but I'm going to argue that I don't think anyone's memory really saved them, but that's beside the point. I did vaguely remember, but I always forget that Odo is a solid this season, so I didn't remember that Odo wasn't a changeling during this episode.
Yeah. I'm trying to remember. Have we, and it's just one of those things where there have been so many episodes now. And listeners, if you have a better memory than I do, please feel free to email us at podrace@gmail.com. But this isn't the first time that we've seen the station in the occupation days, because we had flashbacks in that one Nawari episode
too. That might have been the only other one. I know there are going to be more going forward. I'm kind of thinking about a specific one involving Kira, but I don't remember. But obviously, I was going to make a joke that, like, of course our listeners would probably have a better memory than we would about what happened when, because that's just how we are.
Right? And then, what else was I going to say? And I mean, obviously we did see, we've seen the station in the Mirror Universe, which I think borrows some elements from, like, the occupation, but... Yeah, I just really like what I'm all like laying track for, though, incorrectly or very sweatily, is I really like visually how they distinguish the sets, like the promenade, from Deep Space Nine to Terak Nor in the past. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously they add, you know, gates in which to, you know, ghettoize the Bajorans on the station. But also even what they do with, like, the lighting and things like that. It's just, like, a lot just drabber and has a much more, like, aggressive, cold feeling to it.
Yeah, right? I feel like there's Deep Space Nine lighting, there's Mirror Universe lighting, and then there's, like, Terak Nor during the occupation lighting. And I do think they do a good job of, I agree with you, they do a good job of setting the mood with the lighting, and you kind of know where you are. I mean, obviously, our friends didn't know where they were at first, but, like, you could tell, like, we were able to tell there was something different and off about it.
Well, and even, like, later in the episode, the ways in which they, like, dress Quark, like, the patterns of the costume are very much still Quark, but the fabrics and, like, the color palette is more of that, like, drab, muted, like, grays than we would normally see on Quark. And I thought that was a smart move, too.
So Terak Nor is what you're saying. Terak Nor doesn't have Pride Month is how you're explaining this. You alluded to this earlier, but, like, I had a lot of complicated feelings about this episode. I did not find myself sympathetic toward Odo, which I can't tell if that's how I felt the first time I watched this, or it could be how my mood is because of the state of the our real world right now.
Yeah.
Relating to occupations specifically. On a more positive note, I will say that I was very excited to spend some time with Garak, although he is pretty delusional about how his conference viewpoints should have been perceived.
Is he, though? I know he's playing that card, but, like, Garak's, like, a shit disturber. So it's like, I think he knew what it would be like going in, and it's amusing to him. So that's why
it's possible.
Did it.
But
and
I
then
also...
he gets to play the oh.
Yeah, the way he talks about the Bajorans' glorious resistance, the way he phrases it, it like feels like the way that this is something that comes up on True Blood on my other podcast. Like, obviously,
Fang Bangers with a Z.
Yeah, Fang Bangers, like Bill Compton, are the vampire that we. The main vampire on the show, it was someone that was in the Civil War because they live in Louisiana, and he was alive during that time, and that's when he was turned, actually. And so there's always, you know, they're talking about the glorious dead, and like Sookie's grandmother, Adele, is like, you know, part of the like daughters. Like, it's like the DAR, but for the
Daughters of the Confederacy.
But it's like for the Civil War.
The Daughters of the Confederacy or whatever.
I don't remember the name of the group, and I honestly don't remember if the show uses like a real name of a real group.
The actual name.
But it does feel very similar to the way he's phrasing that. And I'm like, it's kind of icky. But because it's Garrick, it is funny. I do think you're probably right. He knows what he's doing. And he's trying to stir it on purpose.
Yeah, it's... how do I want to thread this needle? The ways in which nation states or ethnic groups that form nation states go about the process of like shared myth-making... on one hand, is really interesting. And on the other hand, is like... completely terrifying, right? And like it's powerful, like you can't deny that. And it's like, yeah, okay, we know in the context of this episode, it's like, yes, Bajoran resistance generally good, Cardassian occupation bad. There's more complexity in there, and I think this episode tries to like tease that out a bit more, which is something I do appreciate about this episode.
Yeah.
But yeah, like you said, whether it's the whole like lost cause fallacy when it comes to, you know, the South and the American Civil War, or, you know, there's cases in, you know, looking at Ukrainian nationalism kind of coming out of, you know, the fight for Ukrainian like independence and against the Soviets during the Second World War, and a lot of those venerated Ukrainian nationalist heroes were actually part of ended up joining the SS, and like, again, they were Nazi collaborators at best, if not just full-on Nazis doing Nazi persecution, violence,
this is really
genocidal things,
this is
right?
Really random, but the way you phrased that made me remember that the other, like, very recently, like last few months, my dad basically texted the family and was like, "Fuck Coco Chanel," and apparently he had just learned that she was a Nazi collaborator.
Sorry,
and me and Karen, my sister, were like, "Yeah, we've known that for years. Like, where have you been?" Anyway,
sorry, I shouldn't laugh. We're all on our own journeys, but yeah,
I was like, I mean, to be fair, like, why would my dad know anything about Chanel? Like, that is fine. Like, it's not like
fair.
It was, you know, someone who was a bicyclist or something. Then I'd be like,
yeah,
you should have known that, Marty.
fair enough, but. Yeah, but even talking like in the Ukrainian diaspora within Canada, there's complexity there, right? Because again, they venerate their national heroes, and it's like, oh no, they like did bad stuff, right? So, and again, I'd be remiss if I didn't also mention this too, where it's like that fact is very real, but also is Russia like taking that historical fact and like twisting it as justification for their occupation of Ukraine? Also, yes. So like there's complexity.
Before we get into the meat of the episode, I just wanted to call out that Kurtwood Smith is in this episode. He plays Thrax, the other security guy on Tarek Nor. And this is really fun because last night I watched the first half of Star Trek 6 The Undiscovered Country, which everyone should know is one of my favorite movies. I only didn't finish it because it was a long day. It was my second or third movie of the day, and I was tired and went to bed. I will finish it tonight, but I love a Kurtwood Smith visit.
Kurtwood Smith will also appear in Voyager, in a very good Voyager two-parter coming up. Also, his name in that is really similar to Thrax. It's Anorax.
They all just sound like they're saying like Anthrax, honestly. Like it's like...
And then he also was the voice of a magistrate in the first season of Lower Decks.
Yes.
Which I'd forgotten.
Was that the episode where they think they're on trial, but it's like a celebration?
Yeah, actually it is. Yeah. Veritas or whatever.
I love that episode. Yeah. it's very silly. But yeah, he's the one that's like questioning them, right? If I recall correctly.
That sounds right.
Yeah. And he's like so accusatory and they're like so nervous. And it's just like, no, we're celebrating your commanding officers. This is a party. Couldn't you tell?
Yeah, well, and it's funny to circle it all back, though. It's very much like a riff off the trial scenes in Star Trek 6.
Oh, 100%. Like,
that's how they have it set up, right?
Exactly. So. I love it. So this episode is mostly what I would call a dream sequence, kind of. I mean, I know we find out at the end that something happened, and Odo's body decided that it needed to form the Great Link, but only Garak, Dex, and Sisko were available, so this other dream-like thing happened. I thought that explanation was very funny, and I don't think that needs to be investigated further. It was very much like Star Trek nonsense caused this.
They couldn't find an orb, so they had exactly. to, like, you know, do latent green.
I guess they did an orb thing a few episodes ago, right?
So I was going to say, they just created an orb of time to do Trials and Tribulations 2 weeks before.
Yeah,
so
you couldn't do it again. So yeah, our friends are unconscious after arriving back from a conference where they were talking about the occupation. So it makes sense that this was on Odo's mind when they went into this dream state. They realize pretty quickly that they're on Terraknor pre-Deep Space Nine, although I think they took them a while to figure out like exactly how long ago it was, because Thrax was the security officer before Odo, but then we find out later that the time that they're there is when Odo should have been the security officer. But obviously Odo is like Odo, so yeah, you can't have two people in it's not like Back to the Future rules because it's a dream. So it's not like there's gonna be two Docs and two Martys. No one is acting too weird towards them, so they realize soon also that they're Bajorans, and they're specifically these three Bajorans that were...
Quantum leap rules apply.
I'm sorry? Quantum leap.
It's just quantum leap rules apply, right?
Like, so I've only seen one episode Scott Bak- of that. So what are the quantum leap rules?
So basically, like... as he's like skipping through, I don't know about the new show.
The Scott Bakula conversation.
It's like he jumps through, and it's like history like of his like lifetime, but like he appears in the body of someone else that like he's helping guide through this or like guiding through this historical thing to kind of either make it right or like, you know, acting out to like get the certain conditions for him to go on to the next leap. But like we see him as Scott Bakula, but like when he looks in the mirror and everyone else, they see him as like whomever the person
is
he's like whose life he jumped into.
Got it. Can I tell you a really funny thing about that show really quick? I like you're gonna say no. I don't know why I formed it into a question. I only watched one episode of that show, and he jumped into the body or the life of a woman, and so he was like in drag, I guess, the whole episode.
Yeah.
And I thought that the movie was about the TV show, like I thought it was about him being in drag. Like I didn't know the premise of the show, And I just thought that he, like, dressed as a woman every week. And I was like, oh, that's cool.
How progressive for the early 90s. Oh, boy. That's his catchphrase when he, like, go out. Oh, boy.
Got it, got it. So I do really like, within the Tarek Noor dream universe, Odo and Garrick are very much at odds of, like, how to handle this world. Like, Garrick is like, I'm a Cardassian. I have security codes. I can tell them and they'll know. And they're all like, you look Bajoran. These people are not going to believe a goddamn thing that you have to say. And Odo is fighting his previous self where he was trying to just keep law and order. And it's like, no, we have to get to the truth. And also, no, these people do not care about the truth because they hate Bajorans and think they're better than them. And they're not going to believe a goddamn thing that you say. And so they both have these different views on how to handle this. Like, Garrick's never been oppressed before, really. So he doesn't understand that he's going to be treated like less than nothing, regardless of what he says or does. And Odo should know better, but is still trying to argue that they should be looking for the truth, not just convict people.
And even, like, before the, you know, when we have our classic Star Trek shuttle runabout home from conference, like, pre-credits scene or whatever, they're all like, oh, Odo was a celebrity at this conference, and they said, he only served justice. He may have worked for the Cardassians, but he only served justice. And it's like, bleh. And then the episode goes in, and it's like, oh, finally, five seasons in, our complaints about Odo are being interrogated.
Yes, I was thinking that too. As it's like,
why does Kira not think he's a collaborator?
I know, and I still feel like I want to get to that, the scene with Kira and Odo maybe towards the end, like at the end, because I do have feelings about it. But yeah, like, everything we've ever complained about Odo is, like, basically proven in this episode, and it makes me feel really vindicated, and I think that's part of why I had literally no pity for him, and no, I wasn't sympathetic toward him at all in this episode, and I think it's because I've been saying that I don't understand why he's beloved. I mean, don't get me wrong, like, Renee is amazing, and I do like Odo when we're not talking about these topics. I don't hate him as a character, but it is very complicated, and he is someone that collaborated with the Cardassians, and this proves it. And I just feel extremely correct and really proud of myself.
Well, and he, it even demonstrates, and I think why, like, before this episode and stuff, like, the idea of, like, Odo being, like, kind of venerated amongst, like, the Bajorans is because the system is designed in a certain way, and Odo had this reputation of, you know, yes, he's part of the system, but he's, like, one of the good ones, right? And fights for, you know, justice and what's right and blah, 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 blah. But, like, this episode does a really good job of demonstrating how the legal system is designed in a way that doesn't always focus on what actually is true. It's focused on, once you kind of get on that track and you have enough, you know, evidence for a conviction, it progresses, right? And it's like, I use the term legal system very intentionally, because it's more colloquially referred to as the quote justice system, but justice is actually really rare in the kind of machinations of that, right? And again, like, in, I think this is this case that Odo, let's just, you know, say it, basically sent three innocent people to their deaths because he thought they were guilty, and yeah, that's the legal system at work, but it's not justice.
Yep, I agree. I don't really have anything to add to that, but I agree with what you're saying. And justice is a complicated thing because it doesn't mean the same thing to everyone. And, like, it wouldn't, you know? And that is...
No.
It shouldn't mean the same thing to everyone because that wouldn't make sense. And I think that the way that Odo talks about justice, even in his Deep Space Nine days, is not really how I would define the word.
Yeah.
Because he would lock someone up, and I'm like, okay, but how do we fix what happened? I mean, yeah. You and I, even outside of podcasting, talk about restorative justice conceptually. And I think that that has really opened my eyes to the fact that the way that our world talks about justice is screwed up in general.
Yeah. And I mean, I like, there's other stuff about the episode, kind of like a little kind of B plot that we can kind of tease out with some of like the Dax stuff or other scenes. But before kind of moving to that, the big question I still have about this whole, like, okay, we've like talked about national myth making, we've talked about, like, you know, Odo's, the perception of Odo before, like, serving justice and all of this stuff. And then, like, and to build off kind of that point you said about, like, justice meaning different things. So if these three Bajorans that are, you know, played by our cast of characters here, Quantum Leap style, if they had attempted to assassinate the brutal dictator of their occupation, then their state murders would be justified. That would be justice.
I think them, like, murdering Golden Kot is justice, actually.
Exactly.
Case. I mean, like, that is, we do not, I'm going to say this very firmly. I have it later in the notes, but we do not criticize how oppressed people get their freedom. That is not something that Matt or I do. I feel like I could speak for both of us here. I mean, I do think, as long as it's to the people that are doing it to you, I guess, whatever. I don't see, now I'm like, this is my internet brain.
You've
where I'm like trying to like preemptively come out and be like, okay, you can't call me out because I accounted for every single little scenario. Yeah. And I think that I'm just going to say, in general, for the most part, you know, I am just not going to criticize how someone gets their freedom when they are being, when a genocide's being done to them.
It's one of those things I wish I had tattooed to my, like, forehead right now.
Well, then I do feel okay that I spoke for both of us.
It's all good. If I did not co-sign, I would have said something.
I feel like you would have, you would have told me in the notes and been like, no, you could just say I, not we.
I'm also, because it's not completely topical to the episode, and you did make the pride joke earlier, which was good. I'm also like holding back a rant on like pink washing.
I saw a really funny post on Blue Sky this week or last week. I don't remember the specifics, but it was like, it's great coming onto Blue Sky during Pride Month because it's not a bunch of like corporate pride shit, because all those companies are not on Blue Sky. So it's kind of nice to like not have to deal with that. Like, imagine what Threads looks like right now. I mean, Instagram's pretty bad, so it would be very similar.
Yeah.
So the big thing is that Odo isn't being forthcoming about this throughout the episode. He kind of admits it later on that he knows that these three people are innocent of trying to murder Gul Dukat, and he found out because he's the one that convicted them. And as soon as they were dead, something else happened. And obviously, if they're dead, they could not have been responsible for doing another thing. And I'm like, this is so beside the point, because, like, they should be trying to kill Gul Dukat. Like, I just was so sympathetic to the three Bajorans, regardless of whether they tried to kill anyone or not.
Yeah.
I did want to talk about a little bit about the scenes with Gul Dukat and Dax. He kind of picks her in a creepy way, like to be his like Bajoran girlfriend, I guess, or like someone to hang out with him. I'm not sure what's, it's like they're trying to imply that I get the impression they're trying to imply it's a little bit sexual for him because he's like
100%
having, it's like a, he's having her pour wine for them, basically. Air quotes, yeah, sort of thing. Exactly.
And it's forced erotic labor.
Yeah, it really is. And like, obviously, we don't see anything sexual happen. And I don't remember. Sorry, I don't remember who said this, but when I was watching this episode like a week ago with some friends, someone. I usually have been watching this with, like, my roommates and then, like, my friend AJ. And someone pointed out, like, if we had had a scene where Gul Dukat, like, was very overtly rapey or raped or attempted rape toward Dax, we would never be able to, like, have him as a character on the show again where he's like, oh, our friendly foe, occasional friendly foe. Like, that would not be possible.
Yeah.
So they really had to, like, not have that scene. He just wouldn't have been able to be that character anymore if we saw him do something that horrible. Obviously we know he did horrible things during the occupation, but we haven't actually really seen them. And I think they thread that needle a lot because they want to use him sometimes in a comedic way. And I appreciate that because I do enjoy episodes with Gul Dukat, and I like the complexity of those dynamics where he's like, you know, you kind of never know where he's coming from, but sometimes you are on the same side as him and sometimes you're not. And I find that really interesting. So I'm kind of happy that they didn't go for that here because I think that would have ruined the character and my further enjoyment of the show.
Yeah, like Dukat's a really interesting character, and yes, because of Twitter, rain retweets are not endorsements, I want to like make that explicit, but like it's really unsettling here how it's like Dukat like pushes up against the line, and you can tell that like part of him like wants to like cross it even further, and it's like, okay, you're doing forced, like, you know, erotic labor, but like I'm one of the good ones because I'm not, you know, doing even more advances on you and we're being friendly, and but like it just is a very, very insidious and unsettling and like icky in like I think a very clever way. But also we get some real insight into, because this is what they said, it's 7 years in the past. Yes. So this would be like 2 years before the series starts proper, give or take a star date or two. Yep. How, like, infantilizing of the group he's oppressing that, like, he is. It's like, oh, they're my children, and I'm doing, you know, their resistance is a response to my bad parenting. And just, like, it's so unsettling, and, like, he's delusional, and it's just... He actually believes that, unlike Garrick talking at the beginning of the episode, I don't think Garrick actually believes what he's saying. I just think he's a shit disturber.
So you're saying Garrick should have been in the Glass Onion, in the Knives Out sequel.
Yeah, maybe. I agree. And it's just, I always, there's that whole thing with like, I mean, it's not just cismen, but like largely cismen, where it's like, well, I'm one of the good ones, where it's like, I'll be shitty up to a point, but then you should like praise me because I didn't cross that line, even though part of me kind of wanted to.
Yeah.
Right? It's just like.
One thing I found cool about this episode, and this is something that I very much like in TV shows where this is done well, is just. They did a really good job of making it feel like a dream. I know this is something I've talked to you about. Like, I think The Sopranos is, like, the top tier for, like, dream sequences in TV shows for me. Mm-hmm. And I think this, especially the scene where they're trying to escape toward the end of this episode, where they finally are, like, you know, Dax finagles a situation where, like, she's Gul Dukat's unconscious, she's fucked up their computer systems, she knows where his shuttle is, and then they get to his private shuttle, and then oops, they're back in their cell. And I think that was the most dreamlike part of the episode for me, because it was like, in a dream, you'll just be in one scene and it just ends without explanation and you're somewhere else. And I think that that felt very dreamish to me. And it reminded me of how they do it on The Sopranos. And I thought that was great.
Yeah. Yeah. One other, just to your point kind of earlier about Garrick, like, of feeling what it's like to be marginalized and oppressed for the first time. I thought it when he's trying to talk his way out of, like, Dax being, air quotes, taken into custody, and, like, he's offering a bribe to the Cardassian guard, and the Cardassian guard's interested, and then he looks up and realizes that he's being watched by Dukat. So then he just, like, punches him and, like, does it whenever, and the idea of the performativeness and, like, the idea of, like, oh, I'm going to talk my way out of it, like you say, and then it's like, oh, no, being watched, have to be violent, because that's what's expected of me. It's just like, yeah.
I did also think it was interesting that it felt very Matrix-y that he had a bloody nose in real life. They had, like, cut to that scene on Deep Space Nine where Garrick's, like, bleeding from the nose, and they're talking about how they're all unconscious, and it just made me think of the Matrix. I'm trying to think if there's anything really to talk about besides that final scene with Kira at the end. Did you have anything else before I get to that?
I mean, just that it's very convenient that Kira in the past had told Sisko exactly what to do to contact the Resistance on Terek Nor. But, you know, it's fine. I'll allow it.
Oh, I do want to talk real quick about how Quark talks to them like they're day laborers. In a really gross, like, capitalist way. 12 hours, 2 5-minute breaks, 1 slip of latinum each. Like, that's fucking terrible. And also that Odo makes a joke in that moment about, like, injuring Quark and worrying if it would upset the timeline. And Sisko's like, fuck it, let's ride, let's do it. I mean, obviously they don't, but, like, I thought it was a really funny comment from Sisko. Like, yeah, let's fuck him up because this sucks. Okay, so at the end of the episode, Kira comes in because it's like 2 days later, and she's read the report of what happened, and she's understandable,
looking great even though she just had a baby.
I know, she was so great. I do think that they try to make it look like she was still pregnant by wearing the outfit, because I don't remember, like, do they? Yeah, because they haven't had her give birth, like, in the show yet, right?
No, but, like, also I thought she would have been, like, in that a bit too, because it's, like, literally, like, I don't know, probably would have just at most had a baby, like, a month ago.
No, I agree, but I also think she's still in the show.
In the show, yeah.
And because we haven't had one of my favorite scenes ever yet. And she's really upset, and I rightfully, and she doesn't forgive him, and I think that that's correct. That's the correct way to handle that. I'm slightly bothered by the line where she said, I guess everyone had to get a little dirty to survive the occupation. And I get what she's saying, and Odo probably would have been killed if he didn't act how he did, also. Like,
yeah.
But I do like that she says, like, promise me no one else innocent died. And he's like, I literally cannot promise you that. Like, I'm not going to lie to you. It was just felt like a very honest scene. I kind of feel like I don't think that it ever comes up again that I can remember. And I think that if it was a real situation, Kira would probably need a lot of space from Odo. And I don't think I don't recall that that's something that actually happens. And it's a TV show and it's episodic and that's fine. But I think in real life, you would want, like, a break from that friendship for a bit.
And I know DS9's, like, sort of serialized and, like, gets more as the last two seasons continue. But yeah, it still is very much a product of the, like, if this was, like you say, True Blood as an example, like, so, like, an HBO show with, like, 10 episodes a season, this would be a pretty long running, like, thing in their relationship, and it's kind of, you know, just moved on from. And yeah, I did really like the scene. I do agree that it's very honest, but again, also to our justice conversation earlier, which is like, no more innocent people would have died, and, like, that's we're coded one way, but
again, killing Caldecott would have been cool and good, right? Yep. So it's like, even if they had done it, like, yeah, it's just, yeah. There's some weird inconsistencies in this episode.
I mean, I do feel like they would have just put a different person, a new Gull in there, so I don't know how much it would have affected the occupation in general, but it would have been really rewarding to just kill him if I would have enjoyed having killed him.
Yeah, but like you success kill a bunch of prefects, so who's gonna want that job?
Yeah, that's right? Fair.
Like,
yeah, but I wonder what number it would take, like how many you'd have to kill to get to that point. Shit's complicated.
And then for all we know, it could have been the attempt could have been in retaliation to something that Dukat had done, you know, maybe like in Rakantha province or something like that.
Or
right?
It could have
like,
been their friend was the last Dax that he had as his girlfriend or whatever, you know, like the last person. Like there's all sorts of reasons why it could have been warranted.
Yeah.
I think I'm going to speak for both of us and say that there was nothing thirsty about this episode, so I think we can skip the Altair Water Thirst Quencher this week.
Yeah.
And I don't know about you, but my most Star Trek thing is definitely a timey-wimey dream thing happened on the way back from a conference.
Yeah. Yeah, that was going to be mine as well. I guess the only other like addendum I would add to that was Kurtwood Smith in alien makeup.
Fair. I do love his like little like mustachey thing in because I feel like in the Undiscovered Country, I don't know what species he is, but he's not human, or at least not 100%
human. Afrosian, I think. Yeah, is their name?
he looks like very humanoid in that, but like he has like a cool mustache situation, and he's just—it's great.
Well, until next time, Elise, where can folks find more of you on the internet?
You can find me on Blue Sky, Letterboxd, and Storygraph at Chicken Tendi. That's TENDI. You can find my other podcast, Fang Bangers Pod, on Blue Sky and Instagram at Fang Bangers Pod. That's bangers with a Z or Z, as well as anywhere you listen to podcasts.
Yeah, you can catch me on Blue Sky and Letterboxd at Maddie Hugh, MattyHugh. You can catch us together at Blue Sky on Instagram at PodRace, and you can email us at podrace@gmail.com.
Please remember to rate and review us on the podcatching system of your choice. Thank you again to our editor, Melissa, and to DJ Empirical for our interstellar theme song.
And until next time, computer and program.
Bye.